Welcome back in to another college football preview, man. Week 8, going to be cool. We're going to see some separation this weekend and some contenders, I think, fall by the wayside. Brent Rollins joining me, as always. He writes for PFF, Rivals as well, does stuff with Rivals. Brent, something hasn't happened for UGA since 2021, since they've been a underdog. That's how long it's been since Georgia's been an underdog. And a true road game underdog, the last time that happened was 2020 at Bama. So it's been a long time. Georgia has been talked about as the premier team in college football. And man, I think this week is a lot of people going to be pulling against Georgia. They're obviously the underdog. And I think there's been a lot of reason to question so far what you've seen from the dogs. So let's start there with Georgia and Texas.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned the last road dog 2020 at Bama. Do you remember who the OC was for Bama in that game? That would be the current head coach of Texas, Steve Sarkisian. So, you know, a lot of similarities there. But what's interesting about this game specifically to me is that what you've seen Texas dominate on both sides of the football the entirety of the season, you know, the sort of complete team moniker, whereas Georgia has struggled in certain areas and struggled on the road at Bama, struggled even with issues with Mississippi State last week. And you haven't seen a four-quarter game from them, even with the Clemson game. It was a struggle in the first half. So it's one where what prevails? What you've seen prevail, or does some of the scheduling and, you know, competition that's been played maybe make things look a little differently once you get on the field?
Well, so speak to Texas first. Average of 37 points a game winning. Closest game has been 22. They've played two quarterbacks, obviously. They've played a lot of youth, replaced a lot of guys, but continue to be really, really dominant. And then Georgia, the biggest thing for me, man, I haven't seen them play a complete game yet. Like, we can go to Clemson, like you said, first half struggle, second half kick it in gear. Kentucky, first half really, really struggle, second half better. Auburn, same thing. Like, slow start, actually, kicked it in gear in the second half. And then Mississippi State, great first half, bad second half. Alabama, bad first half, great second half. So a lot of inconsistent. But, you know, one thing that here's the thing to realize, and we alluded to this a little bit on Saturday. Carson Beck, the last three games, Brent, 50 attempts, 48 attempts, and 29 attempts. So just whatever you think about Georgia in the past, conservative, run the ball first, this is Carson Beck's team, and they are going to go as far as he takes them. And his numbers aren't as bad as you think they are. He's had some bad moments.
Especially in the last 2 weeks, he's been really good. Been really good.
He's put up some stupid numbers. He looks really, really good. And he's got a matchup against Texas that I can't wait to see, because, listen, dude, styles make fights. Every week is different. Like, not every game's the same. When you go into the Alabama game, Alabama was extremely cover three centric, didn't blitz, you know, was very conservative. They played Georgia, their first team with real competition. They changed a lot of things up. They ran more zero covers. They became more aggressive. When you watch Texas's defense, here's what I see, Brent. I don't see a game breaker or a game wrecker. I don't see that guy. I wrote down Colin Simmons. I think he's really, really good. A better pass rusher than run defender. I think you can run at him.
Yes.
But good player. But I see a lot of good across the board in this matchup. So I don't think this is the defense that I say is going to shut Georgia out. I think Georgia is going to be able to have some success, and I think their wide receivers are going to be able to have some success. I think they're going to be able to score some points. So I like this matchup for Georgia, even though Texas is the best team in the country, the most complete team.
I would agree. The style part, the styles make fights. I think that's the one where Ewers is not a running threat when you look at the other side of the ball. At least he hasn't been. He was more so last year, especially against Bama in certain instances. But like this year, he has negative yards on design quarterback runs. It's just not a part of his game. But does get the ball out real quick. doesn't really, at least hasn't consistently pushed the ball down the field. I think that blend, that sort of plays into Georgia's hand defensively, but also, like you said, Texas defensively, 45 on the interior. Broughton, I think, he's maybe one of those guys. But outside of that, it's a very, hey, we got four down linemen. We're letting our edge guys go. We're playing very, very small variations in terms of coverage. And maybe they haven't had to, and you're going to see a lot of different things from them. But their linebackers play very aggressive, very downhill. I think the middle of the field for Georgia is going to be one that they can have some success there. But
which is Carson Beck's strength.
Yes.
Carson Beck's strength is tackling the middle of the field. Listen, we're not acting like this, like Georgia's got all these advantages and Georgia's clearly the better team. That's not what we're saying. And I think Quinn Ewers, the reason I don't think he runs as much this year, because I think he knows the answers to the test now. And when I watch him against Michigan, when he scrambles, eyes downfield, bro. He's trying to make big plays. And when I watch, you know, Quinn in the years past, I think it was he would take off. Carson Beck, if it's not there, he's running. Like, he doesn't bring his eyes down, bring him back up. Like, he's going to take off and he's going to run the football. So Isaiah Bond on the outside, elite speed. Georgia's secondary, the more the season has gone on, you see more and more cracks on that side. So I think Texas can make big plays. I think we're going to get scoring in this football game. I think both sides, like Sarkisian is the best play designer in the business. He is absolutely the best at it, man. Like, he uses your eyes against you. He uses motion against you. He spits the ball in the perimeter with easy plays that gets first downs, that get drives going. And so I think this is going to be a war, but I do think Georgia looking bad and not looking as consistent is a good thing for Georgia. Like, continue to push that button. Kirby has ammo. Texas has heard how good they are. Listen, dude, these are 18 to 19 to 20 to 21 and Cam Rising, you know, 55. But like, some kids, you know, they're younger. They've been told they're really, really good. You know, Texas at home, obviously a huge advantage. You know, second big atmosphere Georgia's had to go to with going to Bama. So they've kind of seen it and experienced it. I think this is going to be an absolute war. I think it's going to be a great football game.
Yeah, and one to me where I feel like it's, as long as Georgia takes care of the football, I think it is that. But it's also one where if they don't take care of the football, much like Alabama, Texas will take very much advantage. But the one point you made about Ewers, I think that's the – watching him this year is, if he's pressured in any way, his ability to feel it, move, and then attack down the field, his depth of target, average depth of target, almost doubles when he's pressured. He's looking down the field to hurt you when he's pressured versus in the normal structure of things. And one of the things you meant was Sark, what I love watching with his offense is that he makes you defend both sides of a play, formation, everything. It's, hey, we got run game on going over here. We've got quick action over here. We've got RPO. Everything blends together, which to me is the anti of something we're going to talk about here in a little bit in another game.
Yeah, and I think this game boils down to one stat. Texas has given up one sack all year. They've kept their quarterbacks upright throughout the season. Georgia's pass rush hasn't been great, man. It hasn't been consistent. And so if that continues with the bookend tackles, Texas got, by the way, I haven't had an O-lineman drafted in the first round since 06, I think, Brent. Like, I think it's something like that long. So almost 20 years. I think they got two tackles that could go in the first round. Like, that's how good they are on the exterior. Jalen Walker has to show up number 11. Like, they've got to find guys inside with Ingram Dawkins and Mykael Williams. Like, they're going to have to play their best game on the interior. Texas hasn't run the football particularly great, but they do such a good job of, you know, wearing you out a little bit and running the football when they need to. So I think that will go a long way in deciding the football game. Dude, this
Who
next game – I think Georgia's going to win. I really do. I thought Bama was going to beat Georgia, but I think Georgia, I think they're going to have a lot of success on offense. I think defensively, you know, I think they have a chance to – I think they're going to give up big plays. I think they're going to give up, you know, eye-discipline plays. But I think physically up front, I don't think we've seen the best Georgia we can see. And I just think – I think they're going to put it all together in a big game. I think they're going to play really, really well. and force a few mistakes and keep Quinn Ewers in the pocket. Like, I'm serious. That's what I want to do. I want to keep him in the pocket, and I want to make him beat me from there and make them do it consistently. And if they get in the red zone, by the way, make them pound me. Make them pound me on that side of the field. Don't give up big plays. And I think Georgia finds a way to win this football game.
I actually agree.
Okay, do you? Okay, sweet. All right. Here's a game this is the weirdest. These fan bases, by the way, have been medicated because the last several weeks, like if we go back 2 weeks ago, you know what everybody forgets? They forget that Bama was 1 and Tennessee was 4.
Yeah.
And everything was going like this, and Rocky Top was rolling. Roll Tide, Kalen DeBoer, Nick Saban, who? Like, we've got everything going in the right direction. And the last couple weeks, man, the huge upset with Arkansas beating Tennessee unranked. Unranked Vandy beating Alabama. And then scares against South Carolina, you know, last week, obviously a huge scare. A scare against Florida. Florida, why don't you go for two anyways on the road? Didn't young quarterback anyways. Should have gone for two. But which fan base feels better about themselves going in? Because I think both feel like they're leaking oil. But what stands out about this one, Brent?
Well, I was going to say, fan base feels better is probably the one that's at home. So Tennessee, this is at Tennessee. So I think that's one of the things. But obviously with Tennessee, we'll start there since they are the home team. I don't think Josh Heupel's offense is evolving. And it's putting a lot of pressure to me on Nico, and it's sort of clunky right now, and they haven't picked up any sort of rhythm. And they're, when you look at them, just sort of how they operate, they're about 60% run on first and second down. They get in third down almost more than just as much as any team in the country. It's in the hundreds in terms of the FBS. So putting that, your own quarterback in consistent third downs, like the early in the Florida game, they moved him in the pocket.
Yeah,
I think they got to do more of that. You got to see more early down movement in the pocket, more early down play action, get some sort of rhythm. Because if they don't, now granted, Alabama's defense has not shown much of great ability to stop.
No, and we saw Pavia have a lot of success with his legs and creating. And you've seen them, by the way, get a little bit predictable, I think, on defense too with Alabama. But, dude, I mean, Nico couldn't have had a better start. He couldn't have had a better Iowa game last year in the bowl game. And then first year against Chattanooga, like everything about this offense looked like it was all gas, no breaks, up-tempo. We're going to be the team we've been. Here's, by the way, Brent, listen to this. Nico, the last four games, last five games, 169 yards passing, 158, 194, 173, and 211 against NC State. So the last, you know, four games, they haven't thrown for over 200 yards.
I wrote the same thing.
And this is an offense built on big plays.
Yes.
Like, this is an offense that spreads you out to make explosive plays down the field, to really stretch you. And the best thing about this offense right now is Dylan Sampson, and it ain't close. Like, it ain't close. He's got 15 rushing touchdowns. The school record's 18. Like, he might break the school rushing record in a season this week, halfway through the season. So he's been really, really good. I'll give Heupel credit. He doesn't trust his quarterback, so he hasn't. Late in the games, they've leaned on their defense. And I guess the question to me is, can you continue to lean on your defense, you know, this week? But
you got Peely, the linebacker that's now out.
He gone.
For the season.
He's out for the year.
Hurts their run defense.
And yes.
A guy you want to have when you're facing Jalen Milroe. I think another thing in this game, can Tennessee get pressure? Because obviously you saw against South Carolina and Alabama that pressure, especially edge pressure, affected that game in a massive way. I do think the interesting part about this game, too, is that Tennessee, I think, needs it because they need one of these wins. Georgia or Alabama that they play, or Alabama this week against Alabama or Georgia later. They need one. Alabama can still, I think, survive another loss. They have three straight top 20 opponents right now on their schedule with the win already against Georgia. But yeah, Tennessee's desperate. By the way, Bama's defense, 1-3 and out in the last two games.
Wow. That's ungood.
It's not good.
It's very ungood. Nico, two touchdowns, two INTs the last four games. Just can't find a rhythm. They don't trust him. If they're going to win this football game and their offense is going to have success, Brent, he needs to run the football. Like, if you're going to relegate him to a game manager, run more zone read and run more power read and get him involved with his legs. Like, let him get hit a few times. Maybe that settles him down a little bit in games. But you have to use that element. They're not using that element enough. It's got to be him rushing the football. It's got to be Samson. And I'd love to see one of the things that's hurt Alabama is up-tempo. Mm-hmm. Tennessee's kind of slowed it down a little bit. Like, they've kind of been like, we need to slow it down and protect our defense because we're better on D than we are on O this year. And so I wonder if they can crank that up against Bama, who's given up plays with the no huddle and given up explosive plays. Switching to the other side, Jalen Milroe, Brent, he has 77 rushes this season. Jam Miller has 51. He's the next highest rusher. Like, he looked different last week. I thought Milroe didn't look as explosive. This happens throughout a season, by the way. The body blows. You taking on a bunch of that load, you see guys start to slow down a little bit. I thought I saw him slow down a little bit last week. Yep. And I'm just curious to see how they're going to play him. And if they're going to be willing to continue to run him so much, they've got to find some production outside of Milroe or bust on the ground. Like, they've got to do that. And yep, especially against a Tennessee defense that's really, really good. Like, they're physical, they're deep, they'll rotate up front.
And he even struggled with him running last week. It wasn't like it was like against Georgia where he had open space to no end. It was a struggle against South Carolina. Got hit a lot. And like you said, those things, they take their toll. They very much take their toll. And we've talked about his usage rate a lot, and it's starting to show, I think, especially at the end of that game. The end of South Carolina, he looked out of gas. He 100% looked out of gas.
He's just so frustrating to play, man, because if you go back to that, you know, Georgia game, and you watch the pressures that hit perfectly, but you watch his ability to just make a free guy miss. And then now your defense is hosed. And that's the boomer bust mentality, man. And then you got him and Ryan Williams, who, you know, Ryan Williams is starting to require two guys. And now you got him requiring two guys and then Milroe. Like, I've got to be here's how I play Jalen Milroe from Tennessee. I trust my box, which is really good. Their box is really elite. One of the best in college football. I don't give up big plays. Like, I play soft. I make them earn it. I make Milroe earn it because I think he gets impatient because I think he's so good and so explosive and he wants to push the ball down the field. So I think he'll make some of those mistakes that if you give him a chance to. And I just think you can't try to speed him up. You got to play more zone coverage behind him, make him read it, make him check it down, keep more eyes on him. But I'm interested to see the pass rush of Tennessee that's really good, really deep. A lot of guys that can really run. And when you got defensive linemen up front that are even 300 pounds, that I feel like they can chase him. And then you got obviously guys on the outside that can catch him, that can truly catch him. Yeah. And so I think it's going to be a good matchup. I lean Alabama just because of the playmaking. I know Tennessee's at home, but Milroe's just ability to say bye-bye and take it is
And it is might a lot. Be it might be one or two. It might not take many in this game.
I don't think it's going to be a high-scoring game at all. I mean, I think it will be low-scoring. I say that, so now it's going to be 98 to 96.
It's going to be like a few years ago when Tennessee put up 50 and won.
Yeah. I mean, I just – this game's fun, though, man. A lot on the line with this game, which is really, really cool. So that's – you know, these games always matter to Alabama and Tennessee, like the cigars game and the pictures – and the atmosphere a couple years ago when they won, I was there. It was freaking elite. Like, it was one of the best of the best. And Alabama's going to have to deal with that, which, you know, is going to be real. It's going to be a hard thing for them to handle. So, should be a great game. Nico needs something. I think he needs something to happen early in that football game to give him some juice, some confidence. Yeah. And if he makes some plays, you know, Tennessee easily can win that football game. He's in a slump.
Yep.
He's just not. he's not hitting the curve real well right now, and he's going to have to find a way to get it done. Where are we going next, homie?
Just hold on a second. I got to take a breath because you just made a baseball analogy. But anyway. all right, let's noon game. Nebraska, who still kind of has a shot in the Big Ten at Indiana, who's undefeated and rolling. And I'm thoroughly enjoying listening to their coach do interviews and talk because he's a cool-sounding guy.
Yeah, he's got some soul. He's got some swag. He's got some stuff to him. Indiana, if you don't know, welcome to the football season, everybody. If you haven't paid attention, we've tried to give you a little something on them. Yeah. It's not basketball season, but they're 6-0. They're bowl eligible already, putting up 50 points a game. It's been like 57 years since they were 6-0, and their QB is good. Rourke, like, he's good. Like, he's really, really good, man. And I say that, I think he's one of the best I've seen this year with knowing the answers right away and sticking the ball in the back, arms, pulling it quickly, getting rid of it, like using his eyes. He's really, I'm telling you, man, like he's elite. He's an experienced guy that's been around for a long time, played a lot of football, and he looks like a guy that's so comfortable. And he's going to have to be because I think Nebraska's going to get pressure on him.
Yes.
They'll probably make him one-dimensional in the throw game, but their RPO game is really good. And I'm just telling you, Indiana's going to be banging around in this football game, and this is going to be a good game.
The RPO game is actually, it's unique to watch because their mesh point before the throw, he puts the ball back further, and the ride is much longer. It's not like Wake Forest and their really slow mesh stuff, but there's the extra count or extra step that allows receivers to get open. And you've got the Surratt kid, former James Madison player, 13 for them, that is really physical, catches the football over the middle. Like, it's just, and the decision-making, like you talked about with Rourke, and what's interesting about this, I was looking into the numbers, Indiana as a team, only one drop, best in the country. Second best in the country, Nebraska, only two drops. So receivers get their hands on the football, they catch it in this game. So Raiola struggled finally a little bit against Rutgers.
Here's the thing about that, man. If you watch that game, like the wind was out of control. Like it was like 20-mile-an-hour wind. So take one half and just throw it out the window, because when you're throwing against the wind, it makes a big difference. I feel like that's a song, Running Against the Wind. But like one thing to pay attention to against for Raiola when he has the ball. So here's what I've seen Raiola struggle this year, Brent. Because of – I think he has an insane comfort level, and I think he has a really good feel for football. And when you play zone coverage against him, I think he knows exactly where to go with the football. I think he's been trained really well. I think he's good at it, and I think it's hard to – I think you have to speed his clock up, like, because he's so comfortable. The people – Illinois sped him up. Pressured him like crazy, played more man. They became a lot more human. Rutgers played more man, became a lot more human. That's not Indiana. Indiana can't match up dude for dude with Nebraska. And they can't do that on the outside. Like, you have to have a group of guys on the outside that can consistently win. I don't think Indiana has that. So I think this is more of a zone game. They're going to play more conservative, which allows, you know, Nebraska to not get outnumbered in the box, to maintain some balance, to run the football, to play action, to keep the chains moving. So to me, what I've seen from Raiola, when you give him zone, he has the answers, and he's really, really good. So that matchup to me decides the football game. I think both sides are going to do pretty well, but I lean Nebraska just because of that. But you're crazy if you don't think Indiana can't win this football game.
If Indiana wins, they're going to outscore them because their defense is – I mean, they gave up 28 to Maryland, 24 to Northwestern. But have you got to see a lot of Nebraska's pass rush, because they got some guys.
And they got some dudes.
Got some – zero, not zero. Hank or Nash.
The polar bear.
Nash, Hutmaker.
The polar bear.
Polar bear. Fun to watch.
By the way, 72-0 in his high school career in wrestling.
Yes.
Never lost a match. He was four-time state champion. And remember, Matt Rhule does those cool numbering systems, those guys in the single digits. But, yeah, big, strong sucker.
Nine, Ty Robinson. And then over the past few weeks, guy that hasn't really played much is starting to play more for them on the edge. James Williams, 90. Three games, he's had 20-plus snaps. He's got 18 pressures and four sacks in those three games. Very long and just almost owned the Nebraska game. 9 pressures, 2 sacks against Nebraska. And looks like he's getting better with each game as a pass rusher. So I think that matchup, I do think Nebraska is going to be able to create more stops than Indiana's been able to stop Nebraska.
Agreed.
All right, so we got a lot of different games to look at, sort of quick, sneaky, good, potential upset games. First one, I'll sort of read the four primary ones off here and let you kind of pick which one you want to go for the upset potential.
Okay.
We got Notre Dame at Tech, which is actually at Mercedes-Benz. It's not on campus. Yep. Michigan at Illinois. LSU coming off a big win at Arkansas. And then Miami at Louisville. A lot of road games there. Anybody, any upset potential for you?
Is I'm assuming Michigan's favored, right?
I think they are slightly.
Yeah. I'm just interested to see Michigan with Jack Tuttle, the 7-year man, getting the first start. I thought the offense looked way more I didn't set the world on fire, but for Michigan passing, it looked explosive, for gosh sakes. Yeah. Like it was different than what you saw with the first string quarterback and the second string quarterback, now on the third string quarterback. So I'm interested to watch that game. And by the way, in that football game, Illinois, the only time they struggle is when they can't keep their quarterback upright, and Michigan is going to make you have nightmares. I mean, between Graham and Josiah, I mean, Stewart, like they're the best in the country, I think, at getting to the quarterback. So I think that's the key in the football game. Listen, I think GT can win. I know they're big underdogs, but Georgia Tech, if you look at strength versus strength, like Notre Dame's really good at stopping the pass. Like that's their thing, even though their best corner's out with Morrison. He's out. But their secondary is good. But I think the run game is where Georgia Tech can have some success. And I think Georgia Tech can score with them. Georgia Tech's defense matches up better because they can't stop the pass worth a crud. You saw that in the Syracuse game, and you've seen that in several games. But their run defense is pretty solid. So I think Tech will bang around in this football game. I think it'll be a solid game. I could see this being a 27-24 game, yeah, like a 30-27 game. I think they'll have a chance to win this game in the end.
Haynes King, I think, is day-to-day questionable or something like
he'll
that.
He'll play.
But I think I would 1,000,000% bet that he plays as well. To me, the interesting one is LSU at Arkansas, because humongous win for LSU, and then going to Arkansas, who feels a lot better about themselves after the rest. That's one for me that I look at.
What about Green at QB? What do they say about him?
I haven't really seen any of that.
Yeah, because I just
they haven't, at least last that I looked, they haven't put out those injury report things that I've seen for that one. So
yeah, because to me that's the whole deal. Like with them, that's
a different game if he's not there.
I just don't, because he made big plays down the field in the passing game against Tennessee, and I don't see it with a freshman. You know, I think it'll be tough. And because I know LSU is going to score. Like I know Nussmeier is going to continue to be, with his experience and his playmaking. Golly, he's so good, man. Just so good. Such a good knack. You watch the arm angles and some of the, like that last touchdown throw. Like he's not a big guy in the pocket, but he makes so many great throws. And, you know, the recipe for Arkansas, I think, if they don't have Green. And by the way, here's the thing, Brent. Even if he plays, his best ability is to outrun people. Yeah. His best ability is to scramble. That will be limited. So that's maybe why I would say that I don't feel as good about Arkansas as
he is as good to go, according to that thing we love to call Google.
Yeah, but if you saw him in the Tennessee game, he could barely walk, you know. And I just good to go. I'll give him good to go, but I think he's going to be reduced from what he was.
Yep. Last sort of quick one. I think Navy ends up being undefeated before they play Notre Dame. They host Charlotte. They got Notre Dame
crazy. Navy.
Undefeated Navy
and Army.
Beating people up.
Yeah, and listen, Uncle Gus served in the Army, so it's always go Army, beat Navy. But yeah, I think they really do. I think it's interesting, both teams now, because you see those highlights, because nobody's watching Army, Navy consistently, but you see those highlights and you know, when they break in the action and they show them on Saturdays, and I keep seeing passing plays.
Yeah.
That's what's crazy. Like, it's always been option, but it's two different styles with Army. Their two leading receivers are almost, you know, 30 yards a catch, 30 and 29, making explosive plays, but the backs for Navy, you know, those two guys are over 20 yards a catch, so they're making big plays to the running backs. And a wacky year of college football, both of them scoring 40 points a game. Like, it's a crazy year, man. And they're very much in the group of five discussion, by the way. Like, them and Boise, and like, it's going to get interesting and fun.
Yes, and you might see them. I mean, especially if they were to play undefeated against each other, and that would be unreal. All right, so speaking of the wacky year in college football, we still have I was going to ask you, are you good with the current top six as they are ranked? So we've got Texas 1, Oregon 2, Penn State 3, Ohio State 4, UGA 5, Miami 6. You think that's the right order, or are you kind of like, yeah, whatever?
I kind of don't care about this, but I think Texas, I could put Oregon 1. If I'm going to talk about how good I thought Ohio State was, and I couldn't find deficiencies in that squad, but Oregon to go win like that, like, I got to give them a huge bump. I think that's the most impressive thing. Texas going to Michigan, that's not near as good as we thought it was going to be.
Right.
So maybe I'd go Oregon 1, Texas 2, and then you go Penn State, who's undefeated. They're undefeated. That's what you put there. Interesting, Miami's also undefeated, but Miami's down at 6. So now I think some of that has to do with style points, and Miami down double digits in the fourth quarter in two games and somehow found a way to come back and rally back. But like, I think it's those six. And then you got Bama, by the way, if they kept winning, I think, and Georgia kept winning, I think Bama would go ahead of Georgia because they beat them in the end. I think that's the kind of stuff that we'll start getting to down the road. Ohio State's going to play Penn State. And so it'll start to work its way out.
Next couple weeks are big for sort of, like you said, differentiators and teams showing up and moving up and down big spots. All right. So you got to my recollection, you do have a Heisman vote. So what is your top two or three in the Heisman? Because I think I have an interesting factoid as it relates to who you pick. So I'm curious.
Okay. Number one, to me, he goes from a guy that was kind of like, yeah, I know he's good, I know he's experienced, to, okay, he's the dude, like Dylan Gabriel. I mean, in 1 week, like, I have to give him so much love to do it on that stage against that team, to answer back, like, to throw for, what did he throw for? 341, two touchdowns, zero turnovers.
Rushing one.
Had the 27-yard touchdown run, by the way, that was really, really nice. Complete command, and it was all him. Like, without his ability to make big plays down the field and scramble and run and have that style of offense, like, they got no shot. Like, his experience and his big playing was big time. And then Ginty, obviously, like, he's next for me. And he's got almost 1,300 yards.
So he's averaging 7.3 yards after contact per attempt. Yeah. That would be second in the nation in yards per attempt. And that's after contact.
He averages a first down every carry.
Yep.
Like 10 yards a carry. And by the way, this dude played Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we saw him play Oregon, and he had 50 more yards than his quarterback in that game. So it ain't like they were spinning bean all over the yard.
Yeah.
He had almost 2 hundo and 3 touchdowns versus Oregon.
So like, who would be 3, out of curiosity right now? Who would be 3? Would it be Cam Ward, or would it be Travis Hunter? Is that, are those kind of
– I would have – I mean – I can't put Travis Hunter in there right now. I love the beauty of it, and he is really, really good. But they're not winning. Okay. And he was out last game in the second half, and they lost. But the thing with Cam Ward is his numbers are stupid. You know, he's thrown for 2,200 yards already, 20 touchdowns, threw in another 3 on the ground. But here's the thing. Dude, down 10 in the fourth quarter at Vatek, win. Down 25 in the fourth quarter at Cal, win. So in the biggest moments, Cam Ward has risen up and made big-time plays, even though his defense has been very average and given up a ton of yards and a ton of plays. So he's had some magic, man, and he's put Miami on his back when they've needed him.
Yeah, and it's what's be interesting with the QBs that are involved there is if somehow another non-QB comes up there, because I was looking, if someone were to put Hunter up there and Jenty, and they just say, hey, those are the two best players. It's only happened three times in the last 30 years where the top two did not include a quarterback. So it's going like you said, Gabriel Ward, like those guys are going to eventually be there. All right. Yep. News today after the Oregon game, the landing rule quickly becomes a thing. That the penalty, the clock goes back and the 12-man penalty. Thoughts on that?
Awesome. I mean, what Dan Lanning did was fantastic. And by the way, like, your job as a coach is to be prepared. And your job as a defensive coach is to use every rule you can to benefit you. You've seen the substitution rule. Like, you've seen so many defensive, like, when the offense subs late, yeah, the defense crawls off the field. Yep. And then the other guy runs on really, really slow. The offense has every built-in advantage in the game of football. Y'all do realize that. They get the shift. They get the motion. They control when the ball is snapped. They can't be touched when they're running routes past 5 yards. Like, give me a freaking break. They've got all the rules. Dan Lanning said, I got one, bro. And perfectly, if y'all don't remember, late in the ball game, he slides a 12th defender on the field on purpose.
Yeah,
very much on purpose. Near his sideline. By the way, it was trips into the boundary up there.
Yeah.
Slides it right into the spot to take away an extra part of the field right there on the side where Ohio State might attack. And guess what? Penalty. Dan Lanning says, so what? It's under 20 seconds left in this ball game. Yeah. I don't care. You can have the 5 yards. Bro, I don't know how many coaches in America would do that. I don't think there's many.
Yeah.
I think that he knew the rules that much gives you even more of a tip of a cap to Dan Lanning, because he is that dude with his energy, with his passion, and then obviously his smarts and his brightness. They've already changed the rule in the beginning of this, in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
That shows you how crazy that is.
What was interesting, though, I was reading about it in the language that they put. So they even added, at least what I read, I might be incorrect, but at least reading it, if the 12th player attempting to exit but was still on the field and no influence on the play, then normal substitution penalty enforced with no clock adjustment. So now,
somebody's
going to use that, and they're going to be like, all right.
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, by the way.
Yes.
Because define no influence. Yeah. You've also now created more gray. Refs have a hard enough time making calls. So if he bats the ball down, he had influence. If he's standing near the ball, he didn't have influence. Like, let me tell you something. In that play, that dude had influence.
Yeah.
He was right in the perfect spot to absolutely make a difference. Ryan Day's head was spinning. 12 guys, 12 guys. Dan's like, yeah, 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 go ahead. Yeah, you can have 12. Yeah, we've got 12. That's exactly what we want, because tick, 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 and y'all run out of time. It was beautifully executed. When they do a Lanning rule mid-season, you came up with something pretty brilliant.
Yeah. 3 days after, 3 or 4 days after it happened.
Crazy.
All right. Last but not least, have you seen this story or heard this story? So let me give you the background a little bit, because I actually read the story. So it is first name, Jordan Mott, by the way, and his wife, Claire, not just him, his wife, Claire, were ones who ran on the field at USC in their Penn State gear. So here we go. Yelling at the Trojans as they walk on the field. And then he's running out. By the way, sun's out, guns out for Jordan.
Dang right. Good job, Jordan. Way to stay in the gym, Jordan.
Onto the field.
Get some push-ups and sit-ups, baby.
Completely goes.
So tell them the rule, Brent.
It was awesome. Like, you got
if you pay how much?
It was cost from $14.50 to $18.40, depending upon the game. I think in the article I read, he said they paid $1,800. Yep. So
you could pay to run out in front of the team.
Yep.
With USC, which, by the way, interesting way to make money. It's very Very interesting.
I have a follow-up question on that. We'll get to it in a second.
But. Yeah, that's a little strange to me. I wouldn't love that, but how about I'll take advantage of that rule. I'll give you my money, but I'm going to rock my Penn State gear and I'm going to run out right in front of you and taunt you. That is absolute onions. Amazing. Like, awesome. Great job. I love everything about it. And now, unfortunately, it's going to go away.
Yes, it was quickly changed that they had to wear USC gear. But this is one you can use for the Family Goals podcast, by the way, because his wife, Claire, who they had just gotten married 2 months prior, said the decision was a no-brainer. And that even something about, promises in her vows, promises to never make plans on a Saturday when the Nittany Lions are on.
I mean, by the way,
the
congratulations, you married up. Like, you married in, that marriage is going to be blessed and fruitful. Like, you people that get married, by the way, on Saturdays in the fall, what are you doing? Like, we've got to do better. We can't be married. Like, we've got to educate our brides early and start it off right. We're not, baby, I love you. I would love to get married, but what is my team? Okay, we might do it on a bye week, but... But I just,
it might not never always be the bye week unless,
huh?
It might not always be the bye week. You never know there.
No, it's crazy. But
so I will say, the follow-up question is how long before schools really use this and say, hey, this will donate to our collective and you can ride on the Harley with the duck, or maybe if you have like an athletic kind of screening, you can jump through the G at Georgia, you know, the big banner. You think we see that anytime soon?
I would use it.
Why not?
I mean, I'd put stickers. They're already putting stickers on everything and use every advantage you can. But I will say this, and I've heard this from coaches in recently, really recently, actually today, that the revenue sharing, you know, the allotment amount, like it's going to be very set very soon. So it's going to be, there's going to be way less of this, like so-and-so's going for $3 million. Like it's going to be set in stone to make things less crazy as it is right now. But you got to find every penny you can. You saw Tennessee adding, you know, 10% to NIL for tickets. Yeah. And I think you'll continue to see that. You see booze being sold in stadiums all over the place now to make more money. So every team's trying to make as much money as they can. And by the way, like the facilities have kind of, who cares about facilities now when I can buy players?
Right.
And that's something that's also changed. Less money being spent on weight room and weights and all that stuff when I can kind of spend it on players and the Jimmies and the Joes that I need to win games. So listen, good show, Brent. Appreciate you digging in, and good week of college football coming up. Yep. If your wife and you are getting married, I don't think it's going to last. I'm ashamed for you for using this weekend, because some great games. If you like the show, man, hit the subscribe, please. Continue to watch, continue to listen, maybe give us a like and stuff like that. If you don't like the show, just leave. You don't have to worry about ever watching again, but we will be here to do the recap on Saturday again. And Saturday night, we'll go live
right
and talk about the reactions and college football will be different this weekend. Come Saturday, there'll be some teams that will be out of the mix and some teams that will be firmly in the mix for the playoffs. So looking forward to talking about it this weekend.